Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful downtown Kodiak, where it is windy, blustery, but warm, 45 degrees, with a light rain fog mist. I would describe this as a heavy rain fog mist, and gusty winds, currently clocking at 30 miles per hour out of the north at the airport. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak's Aleutic Museum has received a significant grant. Jacob Resnick has a report on the idled Alaska ferry Malaspina and what plans, if any, they have for it. And polar bears, their status may or may not change. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. World leaders are paying tribute today to Colin Powell, the son of Jamaican immigrants who became a trailblazer as the U.S.'s first African-American to chair the Joint Chiefs of Staff and serve as Secretary of State. Secretary Powell died today from complications of COVID-19. He was 84 years old. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports on Powell's impactful and complicated legacy.
As the Bush administration's top diplomat Colin Powell made the case at the United Nations in 2003 for the war in Iraq, a case based on faulty intelligence. But the current Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, is remembering Powell for what he did inside the department, modernizing computer systems and empowering career officials.
He loved the State Department and wanted it to thrive. So today is a sad day for us here at State, especially for all those who worked for and with Secretary Powell and will never forget the experience.
Blinken says Powell was a man of ideas but not ideological and could admit mistakes. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
Powell's family, who confirmed his death was related to COVID, says Powell was vaccinated. Aboard Air Force Two, Vice President Kamala Harris spoke to reports that underlying health conditions could have been factors in Secretary Powell's death.
What happened in terms of his health situation is exactly what the doctors have told us can happen, right? In terms of people who are immunocompromised, people who have pre-existing conditions. I think today is a day to really reflect on the life of the man and his extraordinary service, and not to politicize the efficacy of vaccines.
Johns Hopkins University reports more than 700,000 U.S. lives lost to COVID in just 17 months. The Biden administration is asking the Supreme Court to block a Texas law that bans most abortions after about 6 weeks. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports the Justice Department calls the law unconstitutional.
In a new court filing, the Justice Department says other states have tried to overturn the landmark precedent in Roe v. Wade, but that only Texas took matters into its own hands and devised a, quote, unprecedented scheme to thwart judicial review. The Texas law took effect September 1st. Since then, it's severely limited the number of abortions in the state, leading some women to travel long distances for the procedure. Texas says the new law is constitutional and that the DOJ is wrong to sue the state over a law that puts enforcement in the hands of private individuals. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
In Brunswick, Georgia, jury selection underway in the trial of three white men charged with murdering African-American jogger Ahmaud Arbery.
I know my son was lynched by a white mob.
Arbery's father, Mark, is speaking outside the courthouse today. The defendants, a father, his son, and a third man, claim they acted in self-defense. It's NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Kodiak's Aleutic Museum received a grant from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Fund Trustee Council on Wednesday. And it's a whopper. $8 million will go toward renovating the museum. April Lactonen, counselor, executive director for the Aleutic Museum, says it will change the floor plan and the scope of the facility.
Our gallery, the public part of our museum where visitors walk through and look at exhibits, the only critique that we ever hear is, where's the rest of the museum? You know, is it just these two rooms? And we're always saying, well, yeah, you know, but we've packed a lot of information into here. And so please, you know, walk through and let us know what you think. So that was one area that we definitely wanted to expand.
While the oil spill might not immediately seem related to the Aleutic Museum, there's a closer tie than one might think. While the ecological devastation was horrifying, counselor says that the cultural impact of the cleanup effort was also extreme.
During the cleanup, there was a documentation of site disturbances by people who were working on the spill. There were some archaeological sites that were looted or damaged by people who were accessing remote parts of the archipelago that were not normally seeing human activity. Because of that, in 1993, the Kodiak Area Native Association secured a grant from the Exxon Valdez Oil Spill Trustee Council to build the original first floor of our facility, which has primarily been our headquarters ever since then.
Before they could get the grant to renovate the museum, there was one small hurdle. They didn't actually own the building. According to Counselor, Koniag Incorporated recently purchased half the building from natives of Kodiak and is in the process of donating it to the Aleutic Heritage Foundation, which is the governing board of the museum. The first floor of the building is set to be donated soon by CANA, which would see the museum owning the entire facility. The cost of keeping an idled Alaska ferry at the dock is nearly twice as much as reported to the public and state lawmakers. The State Transportation Department has kept the Malaspina laid up since the end of 2019, and as Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, prospective buyers, including one that would use it to fight piracy, have had their calls go unanswered.
The nearly 60-year-old Malaspina was built the year JFK was assassinated, but the blue and gold mainline ferry hasn't carried passengers in almost 2 years. Governor Mike Dunleavy's administration didn't want to invest in the overhaul of its original engines from 1963. Since then, it's been laid up at Ward Cove, a private dock north of Ketchikan, while officials decide what to do with it, whether it be scuttle, sail, or donation. There's been commercial interest. One firm says it wants the Malaspina for anti-piracy operations off the coast of Somalia.
We would be using it as a platform for housing personnel over in the Middle East and off of Africa. There's actually numerous uses for it.
Jonathan McConnell is president of Meridian Global Consulting, a security firm based in Alabama. The Malaspina has staterooms with more than 230 passenger bunks that he says could be outfitted as sleeping quarters for security contractors that patrol shipping lanes to deter attacks from pirates. Email chains between his firm and state officials show that more than a year has gone by since he first expressed interest. He last reached out in July.
We felt largely stonewalled by them, and we're like, listen, we're interested in this vessel. We realize that you're spending a lot of money just having it laid up, and you know, we'd be happy to take it off of their hands at, you know, fair market value. We're not trying to just offer them, you know, $100,000 or a couple $100,000. We're looking at paying, you know, $600,000-$800,000, if not, you know, over $1 million for the vessel. And our claims were not even entertained, it seemed like.
Another prospective buyer in the United Arab Emirates has made a cash offer via email for $625,000 for the Malaspina as is. McConnell says the ship has cash value. It could be sailed or towed on a temporary Coast Guard certificate to be repurposed or sold as scrap.
You know, there's ample opportunities for use for that vessel. I mean, laying it up and spending $40,000 a month for layup fees is astronomical.
That was a view of many inside DOT as well, as a new Coast Alaska public records request reveals. Internal emails, some of them completely redacted, still show officials were surprised and frustrated with the expense of keeping the ship, especially after they learned that the roughly $40,000 a month figure often cited was only about half the true cost of keeping the ship in state ownership. One official pointed out that even giving the Malaspina away would save Alaska money. That's what the Dunleavy administration tried to do with the Philippines. Earlier this year, the governor offered the ship up, free of charge, to the Pacific Islands nation. But Dunleavy's chief of staff, Randy Ruro, told Coast Alaska the deal fell through when the Philippine government learned it would cost tens of millions to fix.
They said that would be, you know, out of their price range for, you know, wanting the boat.
But even afterward, the email showed no evidence that efforts to dispose the ship resumed. The governor's Marine Highway Reshaping Committee recommended more than a year ago that the state sell the ferries it's not using. Earlier this year, the fleet's most modern ships, two fast ferries, were sold to a Spanish firm for service in the Mediterranean. Tom Barrett, the retired Coast Guard admiral, tasked with chairing the working group, says it's apparent the Malaspina is still a drain on state coffers.
Sell it or scrap it. You know, but you just don't want to keep holding it there indefinitely. It's also, you know, you've got insurance, but it's a risk factor. It's an old ship and it's tied up at a dock.
DOT confirmed to Coast Alaska that the cost of insuring the Malaspina ferry is approximately $420,000 a year. Add the more than $400,000 the state's paying in mooring fees under a sole source contract, and the cost is nearly double than ever publicly admitted. Those tasked with oversight of the ferry system say that's a lot more than DOT even disclosed to lawmakers, which is particularly problematic given the Marine Highway System's extremely tight budget. Those overseers include Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel, who says he repeatedly asked the question.
I'm very surprised to learn that the Marine Highway System is able to allocate this insurance cost across each vessel and that they never bothered to mention it to the legislature.
Ruro, the governor's chief of staff, says he's taken personal interest in the Malaspina.
I will step in and talk to DOT, and we'll make sure that any offers or expressions of interest are all reviewed and vetted, you know, for options.
One of the emails released was from a DOT official who said there's significant sentimental value of the ship. He said an evaluation of all alternatives in a public process would likely be the best approach. That was nearly 6 months ago. Since then, the idled ship has cost more than $400,000 to the state of Alaska. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is beginning its next review of polar bears' status under the Endangered Species Act. The review happens every 5 years, and it could result in polar bears being uplisted to endangered. Aaron Knoll, the Threatened and Endangered Species Coordinator for the Fish and Wildlife Service's Alaska region, says polar bears' listing as threatened already affords them many protections under the Endangered Species Act, and there are protections under other laws, too. But she says those only go so far. That's because, as the initial 2008 listing decision notes, the melting of the polar bear's sea ice habitat due to human-induced climate change is their main threat.
Under the Endangered Species Act, we don't have the authority to regulate those greenhouse gas emissions. And similarly, in the listing rule, we noted that there wasn't a regulation at the national or international level that directly and effectively address the primary threat to polar bears, which is that range-wide loss of sea ice habitat. And this still holds true today.
Knoll says that while polar bears' status as a threatened species often draws a lot of attention, it's too early to say what recommendations might come out of the review or what implications they might have. As part of the review, Knoll says the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is looking for any new research on polar bears since the last review in 2017, including about their habitat or threats they face. She says any recommendations based on the review will then go through a public comment period. Federal aviation regulators have announced some recommendations to make flying in Alaska safer. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, it's an attempt to address Alaska's outsized share of crashes, but the agency is stopping short of imposing new safety rules on the industry.
There have been at least 21 people killed in plane crashes in the Ketchikan area alone since 2015. So the Federal Aviation Administration has been expected to roll out some safety improvements ever since federal crash investigators convened a roundtable meeting on Alaska air charter safety back in 2019. First on the list of recommendations is adding to and improving the FAA's network of weather stations to offer real-time data to pilots.
When I was in flight school, I'd fly from Vero Beach to Savannah, Georgia for some sweet tea and pecan pie, and it's about 270 miles, and you have no less than 15 weather reporting stations.
That's Lee Ryan, whose Ryan Air serves more than 70 small Alaska communities.
When I go home to Unalakleet, Anchorage to Unalakleet, it's about 340 miles, you have four weather reporting stations in that distance.
Another recommendation to the FAA is to encourage carriers to equip their planes with an early warning system to prevent mid-air collisions and other types of crashes. The technology, known as Automatic Dependent Surveillance Broadcast, or ADS-B, transmits info about the plane's position, altitude, and speed to nearby aircraft, along with ground stations and satellites. But the FAA stopped short of a rule that would require carriers to install the systems. One of the FAA's lawyers on the line, Howard Martin, says new regulations were outside the scope of the initiative.
This was not a rulemaking process, so it went outside of our charter, what we were supposed to do. Those recommendations would be handled through a separate process.
And that means the FAA's recommendations don't include two big priorities long pushed for by the National Transportation Safety Board, which investigates crashes. Those include safety management systems, they're essentially risk management protocols for airlines, and data recording devices for all planes that carry paying passengers. Congressman Don Young, who was on the FAA call with reporters, said he's glad to see regulators in the industry come out with practical recommendations.
You came to the table with ideas. I go through this life with everybody, not everybody, a lot of people bitching, don't have any suggestions. And you came forth with some good suggestions, put them together, and you have made a good report present to the general public and to the Congress.
He encouraged the FAA to request additional funding for Alaska safety upgrades in the president's next budget. FAA Administrator Steve Dixon told reporters Thursday that Alaska is unique in that many communities aren't served by roads year-round.
Now, because of this partnership and this collaboration, we have a set of thoughtful, specific recommendations about how to improve safety in the state, where more than 80% of communities are accessible only by air travel.
Absent from the rollout was the Transportation Safety Board, which investigates crashes. In a statement, NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy called the FAA's recommendations a step forward, but she said there's still more improvements to be done for Alaska. The FAA says it's addressing some of the NTSB's remaining top recommendations in a separate process. The FAA is slated to propose new rules for charter and air tour operators next fall, according to a notice in the Federal Register. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Wrangell's third graders have been practicing the Alaska flag song and the Wrangell song. In a normal year, they'd perform these songs at an Alaska Day elders luncheon. But with the COVID-19 pandemic ongoing, music teacher Tasha Morse says they had to find a workaround to share their voices with the community. KSTK's Sage Smiley attended an in-class performance and has this report.
Evergreen Elementary School's third grade students sit in three rows on dark blue plastic chairs spaced 3 feet apart. They're singing with their masks on in keeping with the school district's mitigation plan. Music teacher Tasha Morse plays the ukulele. Morse switches out the ukulele for guitar. It's time for a local celebration, the Wrangell song. The Wrangell song was written by Karen Morse, a former music teacher and Morse's mother-in-law.
A long, long time ago. It's been a while, at least 20 years ago, with third graders, back when she was the music teacher here.
It's a Wrangell tradition that the third graders perform at the annual Island of Faith Lutheran Church Elders Luncheon.
In a non-pandemic year, we would travel down there, we would sing our songs, we would stand on their little stage, we'd perform for our elders, and it's usually just a really good, happy feel, you know. It's a happy moment, and it's a good time to perform, but yeah, obviously the pandemic is happening. I don't think that they're doing their luncheon, and we just wanted to continue to spread the Alaska Day Joy.
Spread the joy by performing for the local radio station's lone news reporter wielding a shotgun microphone.
How'd that feel to perform for somebody?
Good.
The last time these third graders performed for an audience, they were in kindergarten. Even an audience of one is a big deal.
That breaks my heart. I'm so glad that we're able to perform for at least one person, and then in turn, the whole entire island. That's so cool, guys.
In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska's salmon are smaller. How might that affect markets? More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Since 2010, Alaska salmon have been getting smaller. That conclusion is based on 60 years of measurements from 12.5 million salmon across Alaska, excluding pinks. A study by Nature Communications has compared average body lengths before 1990 and after 2010. Chinook salmon have shown the most size reduction, averaging an 8% decline, compared to 3.3% in cohos, 2.4% in chum salmon, and a 2.1% shrinkage in sockeyes. At Bristol Bay, for example, the average sockeye weight this summer was roughly a pound less than the 20-year average of 5.7 pounds. Despite the huge catch, total poundage will be the least since 2014. Researchers speculate that rising water temperatures in lakes and streams have prompted salmon to head out to sea far sooner than normal. The drop in time spent in freshwater slows down fish maturity, increases time at sea, and the salmon return at younger ages to spawn. Smaller fish produce lower yields. Tasha Cadence is with Tradex, a global seafood trading company based in Canada.
Anyone who smokes their salmon has a very specific recipe guideline in order to produce a consistent product. Therefore, if they typically were to use a 4 to 6-pound sockeye and the catch is heavy on the 2 to 4-pound sockeye, they have to retool the whole operation.
The smaller size also hurts processors who sell fish portions.
These changes in processing could directly affect companies who make prepackaged and portioned flavored retail items for freezers.
In the longer term, Tradex predicts that a shortage of wild salmon inventories will lead to pricing gains as buyers, quote, lean towards the demand for smaller salmon. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger. For Monday, it is the 18th day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:52. It will set again at 6:56. That will give us 10 hours and 4 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 51 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 23, set in 2016, and our record high was 55, set in 1978. Currently 45 degrees, breezy, and it's been pretty rainy all day. That seems to be slacking off a little. They are saying that we're going to have some rain this afternoon, high near 48. North wind 30 miles per hour, gusting to 40. And our chance of precipitation until tonight, 90%. Rain's likely tonight after 11 p.m. Cloudy skies tonight with a low of 44. North wind continuing to 25 and gusting to 30. And for tomorrow, rain is likely again, mainly before 5 p.m. Cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 46 and north winds coming down to 20 here in town. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 1:37 this afternoon here on the east side. That will be an 8.7-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 7:45 p.m. of 0.7 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 2:07 this afternoon and be 14.4 feet in Larson Bay, followed by a high tide at 2:07, followed by a low tide at 8:23 p.m. of 0.5 feet. Mariners, we do have a gale warning through Tuesday from Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore. For today, northeast 40, seas to 21 feet. For tonight, north 35, seas to 19 feet. And for Tuesday, northwest 30 becoming west 20 in the afternoon north of Dangerous Cape, north 35 becoming northwest 25 in the afternoon, seas to 18 feet on Tuesday. Over in the Shelikof, gale warning today with north winds to 40 knots diminishing to 30 knots this afternoon, seas to 15 feet in the Shelikof, subsiding to 11 feet this afternoon. For tonight, north wind to 20 knots, seas to 6 feet. And for Tuesday, north winds to 30 knots, seas to 8 feet in the Shelikof. The Board of Education is having their regular meeting tonight at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Conference Room. That's number F-140 of the old high school wing. The meeting will be streamed through BlueJeans. Meeting login information is posted on the Kodiak Island Borough School District website under the Board of Education tab. The next meeting of the Kodiak Public Broadcasting Board of Directors will be at 6:30 p.m. Thursday. That's happening via video conference. If you'd like to attend the meeting, please contact Mike Wall at gm@kmxt.org for link information. The public is welcome to attend. The Kodiak Women's Resource and Crisis Center annual membership meeting is happening on Tuesday, October 26th. That's happening at 6 to 7 p.m. over Zoom. Everyone in the community is invited and welcome. Email outreach@kwrcc.org, or you can call them at 486-6171 for information about how to attend. The Humane Society of Kodiak is having its annual meeting on Thursday, October 28th. That's happening from 5:30 to 7 p.m. via video conference. For more information and a link, visit kodiakanimalshelter, that's all one word, .org. Visit the Aleutic Museum on Saturday, October 30th, and you can pick up your very own copy of their new publication for youth about Aleutic history. The museum will distribute 50 free signed paperback copies of Iksani's Trout Hook, written by Alicia Drabeck and inspired by archaeological finds. This book follows two Aleutic youth at fish camp. Stop in by the museum gallery at 215 Mission Road between noon and 4 p.m. on Saturday, October 30th, and you can pick up your own signed copy on this special day. One book per family, please.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day. Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.